this whole thing, we look at life like it's about what you can get from life. And I think, you know, I read something, I was like, that's not what it is. You're going to always be unfulfilled if you look at life like that. It's about knowing you're going to leave one day. And, you know, when you leave, the only way you're going to be fulfilled is if you know you gave everything you had.
You already know what time it is. We're Over the Top, the podcast with your host, Damon Hicks. You already know the father, the entrepreneur, the investor, the leader, the philosopher, all above. Stop playing with me. Let's get into it. Tap in.
This episode is sponsored by The Win, and The Win is my clothing brand, which represent a lot of inspirational quotes. You can get you a hoodie that says, growing mentally, physically, and spiritually, or you can get you a hoodie that says, watch me manifest everything I want, or you can get you a hoodie or a shirt that says, elevate. All those in a lot of sizes, different colors. You can go to the website called thewin.store, or you can hit the link in my bio. My Instagram name is _IamDamon, and I'm going to put it in the podcast as well. So enjoy this episode. Back with another one with Over the Top, the podcast with your host, Damon Hicks. And I hope everybody had a good new year coming into the new year. I hope everybody doing good. You know, I told you I was going to come back with some good big gems, and I got a special guest here with me today, a young lady I spoke to. It's actually a friend of mine's mentor, and I spoke with her. We had a great conversation, a young lady that just blown me away, so I had to have her on my podcast, and you can go ahead and introduce yourself, Jess.
Thank you so much, Damon, for the introduction. So my name is Jessica Azor. I am 28 years old. I'm a real estate investor. I currently own 4 properties in the Nashville area. I'm also property managing 1 property with another one in the pipeline. I'm also a mentor. I'm a businesswoman. I do a lot within the community. I also own founded a nonprofit, Serving Souls. So, yeah.
Ooh, you forgot to tell them you're a philosopher as well.
Oh, that's probably like just my life. Like, I'm a philosopher. I love wisdom. Love learning. My formal education, I have my bachelor's degree in biology and biochemistry. Graduated in 2015.
Okay. So, yeah, I just want to start with just from the beginning of just how you got in the mindset of just, you know, wanting to know that you wanted to go into real estate, or how did you get in the mindset of entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. So I pretty much watched my mom. She's an immigrant. She's from Haiti. I watched her work 2 jobs my whole life, and she always just exchanged her time for money. And I knew I didn't want that lifestyle. I also knew I wanted to be a mother. I'm not a mother yet, but I thought, like, how can I make as much money as my mom's making, but have my time? So I was just on a quest to, like, figure out that, you know. And so I started just with the capital gains model, meaning I would buy things for low, like I would find massage tables on Amazon for $40 or $50 and sell them for like $100. Or, you know, I started a Solar Topic, which is like an outdoor brand, and I started selling things, but I just never was satisfied with the small, you know, $50 profit here, $100 profit here. Eventually I got the cars, and the cars would be like, you know, maybe I bought one car, $480 working, and sold it like $850 not working. I was like, okay, there's some money in here, you know? But that started, you know, $1,000 profit wasn't enough. So I was like, no, I want to see like 5 figures, you know? You just get hungrier and hungrier.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, I graduated college, so these were all side hustles. So my capital gains was side hustle. I was a W-2 employee the whole time. So
you graduated
it
college?
Wasn't like, say that again?
I said, oh, yeah, you went to college. I forgot you said that.
Yeah. I went to college. I graduated at 21 with my degree in biology and biochemistry. I started working at Vanderbilt, and then I started working for the city. So I actually had 2 jobs. I was working 80-hour weeks. I was working Monday through Friday, day shift. And then on the weekends, I was working like Thursday through like Sunday night shift. So what I had was like, basically Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, my schedule overlap, meaning I would work Thursday morning at Vanderbilt, work Thursday night, you know, for the city, work Friday morning, work Friday night. So I would have quadruple shifts. So I would work like basically close to 24 to 48 hours in a short amount of time, with no sleep in between. I would like actually like sleep in between my car. So it was between like drive home, lose 30 minutes to an hour of sleep, or sleep in my car so I can, you know, get an extra 30 minutes to an hour before my next, you know, job.
Yeah, that's what you call dedication.
Oh, yeah. So I did that. I worked about 80 to 96 hour weeks. I think it was the highest I clocked in between both jobs in 1 week. I did that for a whole year. And that year I saved $30,000. I was living with my mom. So wow. That year I was saving $3,000 a month. And by October that year, I saved $30,000. Cool thing about manifestation. So that November, my mom's birthday is in November, November 9th. And so about a couple years before, I was like, pretending it was my mom's birthday. I was like pretending we were in France and stuff. I was like, all right, I'm gonna cook her dinner, like a French dinner. I'm gonna use like these $1 wine glasses, you know, from Dollar Tree. We're gonna put grape juice in it. Like, we was just like pretending, you know. I literally bought like dollar Christmas lights and like formed it into the shape of the Eiffel Tower. So that was like a couple years before that. Well, the year that I saved $30,000, I was like, you know what, the next 2 months when I save $3,000, that's just gonna be like my travel money. So that year, fast forward, is the year I took my mom to Paris. And so it was just really cool because I was like, man, like, can you imagine what you can do, you know, when you stick to the plan?
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
the hardest definitely. Like year of my life, you know, to this day, it was the hardest year of my life. I didn't have a social life. I obviously wasn't going out on weekends because I'm working like night shift weekends, you know, like I sacrificed quite a bit, you know, but that the same $30,000 I had saved in the bank, I was also like, so just to be clear, that $3,000 I was saving a month wasn't just from my W-2 income. It was also from like flipping massage tables. It was also from like flipping cars, you know what I'm saying? So after I saw I could do that, I'm like, okay, now I actually have like five figures in the bank. Like, what can I do with five figures now? Because this is like, all the other stuff I was doing was like baby money, right?
Yeah.
So at 25 years old, 26-ish, right after I had that $30,000 saved up, I met a guy. He also wanted to do more real estate investing. He did more so in stocks and stuff. He was a plumber. He actually ended up being my boyfriend. We dated for like 2 years, but in the beginning of our relationship, he was like, yo, you got a lot of money saved in the bank. You got a decent credit score. He's like, you need to buy a house. So he got me a real estate. He got me a realtor. I started the process in May, like looking for a house. You know, I'm a scientist, right? I told you I got my degree in biology, biochemistry. So from May, I was like, well, I want a good deal. I'm a numbers person, you know? So I was like, I'm going to look at all the houses in like Nashville, Middle Tennessee area. And I'm going to figure out a sweet spot where I can buy a house. And it was a hot market in a, you know, with built-in equity, right? So I started May, and by November is when I actually closed on my house. So you got to think, every day I was treating like a full-time job, and mind you, I was working still. So I looked at, and I kid you not, thousands of properties during that time frame, to the point where by zip code, by square footage, by bedroom and bath, I could tell you like, okay, this is about $20,000 discount, or this is about $30,000 overpriced.
Wow.
So because I wanted a deal. And on top of that, I was also doing extensive research on grants. I have a nonprofit now, but I've always knew there was grant money out there. So, you know, I got a THDA grant, which was $10,000. And I got another $10,000 grant from the bank that I actually ended up getting the mortgage from.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I learned, and plus I got that FHA loan.
Plus the $30,000?
Well, I had $30,000 saved in the bank. And this is the kicker. The $30,000 I had saved in the bank, one of the grants that I had that was a $10,000 grant, I think it was maybe the THDA one, they was like, you can't have more than $20,000 saved in the bank, because if you do, that's basically could be your down payment, right? So I was like, okay, well, I knew that, see, I studied, you reverse engineer, right? So I was like, okay, I really want this grant. I met the requirements of making like $60,000 or less a year, right, on paper, because even if I make like $80,000, you write off $20,000 like in business expenses. So your adjusted gross income is actually 60. They're not looking at your, you know, your gross income. They're looking at your net. So I met that 60,000. So I was like, I'm good there. But then another thing they required is not for you not to have more than 20,000 in the bank. So I took about $10,000 and I went ahead and bought like two $5,000 cars. And then I put them on Turo and I was making like $500 a month. So within a year, I had the original $5,000 for each car and I still had the car. So I already doubled my profit. And then I was able to get that $10,000. I wasn't playing. Like, I don't play about anything. You know, I always make my money legally and ethically. Like, I pride myself, you know, in doing things the right way. But yeah, it's just like, I always tell people, like, follow the rules, like learn the rules and then go around them versus like, oh, I'm just going to blatantly like break the rules. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So yeah. So like, I got that $10,000 from THDA, and then I got $10,000 from First Community Mortgage, which was my bank that gave me the mortgage. And then on top of that, the house I bought was off market. They was about to put it on the market, and I went to go see it before they were going to put it on the market. I offered them, they were offering $199, and I knew all houses in the area with that square footage, with that number of bedrooms and bathroom, was selling for about $215 to $220. So what I did is I got my agent to go look at the property. We did a walkthrough. They was going to put it on the market for $199. I offered $205. And yeah. In their minds, they're thinking, oh, we're getting $6,000 more than what they're asking. In my mind, I'm thinking, I'm saving $10,000 by not about to hit the market, 10 to 15. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So yeah. My first real estate transaction ever, it was like a $35,000 transfer. Well, so just to put things in perspective, I worked 80 to 90 hour weeks for 1 year, slept in my car, you know, about killed myself to have $30,000 saved. Wow. And in one real estate transaction, I made $35,000.
Wow.
I mean, that was life-changing.
I couldn't imagine. Wow. So what kept you focused throughout it? Like, through all that, did you already just see where you was going to be? I mean, like, did you already see?
You know, I couldn't. Let's fast forward. So I'm 3 years in real estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a net worth of $300,000 right now. So I'm 10 times. So now 10 times what that 30,000 was. So 30,000 looks like pennies to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have, to be quite honest, I could have never imagined that I would have expedited like my whole financial career through real estate like I did. I knew it would be different than the little stuff I was doing, like flipping cars or doing Turo, mm-hmm. or flipping massage chair, or you name it, right? I knew it would be different. But if you told me, like, you know, I'm about to be worth $500,000 by the time I'm 30, like, and I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 35, like, and without being a doctor, because mind you, I had my biology and biochemistry degree. I was actually in med school and dropped out. So I knew I'd be a millionaire, but I thought it'd be through, you know, working like a six-figure job in, you know, corporate or in medicine or something like that. Never thought I would build my own wealth on my own through my own businesses, through my own mindset. Like, I didn't even know I had that in me, you know, but I learned everything I needed to. I was diligent. You know, I did what I had to do. I didn't care what people thought about me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, that's the main one. Down.
Yeah.
I think that's the main part. I was watching this interview where a guy was like, people already knew what he was up to. So who did he have to prove anything to? And it was like, he stayed focused for a year straight. He said he didn't worry about buying clothes. He didn't worry about buying a whole bunch of shoes. He just stayed focused. I'm trying to think of his name. I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, I got a question for you. What advice would you give to just any younger people that wanted to start just investing or wanted to start just figuring out where to start at?
Yeah, that's a good question. This is some proprietary intellectual information that I'll give a very brief explanation. So I'll expound upon it on my book. But I have something called the RISE method that mm-hmm. it was just this revelation that God had given me. And the R stands for retirement. The I stands for investing. The S stands for like savings. And then the E stands for like your expenses, your earnings, and emergency funds. So you start with the RISE method actually on the bottom. And the E's are pretty much like what you need for basic budgeting, right? So you need to learn your earnings. You need to know what's coming in. You need to know your expenses. You need to know what's going out. And then you need an emergency fund. You can't actually calculate the emergency fund without the expenses, because the emergency fund is actually 3 to 6 months of your expenses, or however many months you want to be comfortable if things didn't go right. So like, you'll read books, like I haven't read them, but a lot of people used to tell me, I don't like him, I guess we have a similar inspiration. Dave Ramsey, he'll say have $1,000 emergency fund.
Yeah.
You can't really like put everybody in that same box. Realistically, a better method, which is my method, is figure out what your expenses is and then times whatever your expenses is by how many months you want to be safe. For example, if I know I have $2,000 a month expenses and I want a 3 month emergency fund, it's 2,000 times three. I know I need to have a $6,000 a month expense emergency fund, which is 6 times what, you know, someone like Dave Ramsey would be like recommending, right?
Right.
And that's another thing I realized, like I was a financial advisor for the people, specifically people that look like me, because there aren't a lot of big, big time financial advisors that had to go through the struggle that, you know, us minorities have to go through. So the advice they give us is kind of like privilege advice that is very hard to actually like apply, you know, and implement.
It's funny too. You said you wasn't a fan of Dave Ramsey.
Not that I'm not a fan of him. I can listen to everyone from Dave Ramsey to Robert Kiyosaki, which we know Robert Kiyosaki loves to leverage debt, and Dave Ramsey is like no debt. So I'm a very open-minded person.
I say that because I listened to another interview, and the guy was like, "You have your Dave Ramsey's, you have your Robert Kiyosaki's, you have your it's a lot of different people." And it was like, "Dang, at the end of the day, who do you listen to when he's telling you to save? He's telling you to go in debt."
I think the biggest thing in life is to have balance, right?
Yeah.
I don't like extremists one or to the other. You know, like I like to pretty much be level. I like to understand both parties, right? Because a lot of times if you listen to people who don't agree with you or don't have the same understanding, a lot of times whatever they understand or their perspective only strengthens yours, if that makes sense. But a lot of times when people are strong on their belief, they you know, consciously choose to not listen to people who have counteractive or counterintuitive beliefs. And I actually think that's a sign of a lack of intelligence, because that means that your premise or your primary foundation is shaky, and you're afraid that anybody else's idea or understanding is going to shake what you know to be your truth. And a sign of intelligence is ability to change, ability to adapt. So I'm a very open-minded person, which is funny because I'm like, my values and my principles for the most part don't change. Like, you know, I believe in the Bible, I believe in the word of God, you know, I believe in a lot of others. I'm also a scientist. Like there's a lot of things that I do and I practice that people might look at me and be like, well, these theoretically contradict, you know, but I have, you know, balance in my life.
Yeah. I do too as well. So I have another question for you on just everything that you've accomplished with the real estate and the mentoring and graduating from college. How did you get past just the people you love or maybe friends or family not believing in you when you were on that mission, and people maybe was telling you, maybe you should be doing this, or maybe you should take that $30,000 and actually buy this instead of doing what you say you want to do? How did you get past that?
That's a good question. So like, I think it was Grant Cardone, it was someone. So I have a lot of internet mentors, like actually quite a bit. So my thing is, I'm only going to study people that I want to be like. So one of them were saying, like, don't listen to people who aren't in a position, you know, you want to be, in a sense of their, like, so example, like someone has moral principles they want to teach me, that's fine. If someone has money principles they want to teach me, but they're broke, I'm not really going to listen to you because you have no results to show for it. You know what I'm saying?
Especially
if you had time to your side, if you've had 20 to 30 years to figure it out. So like, it was the same concept. Like, you know, a lot of people might look rich, but I was trying to build wealth. So I wasn't like interested in like, you know, rich people's like advice, because I don't want to be rich. I actually surpassed rich to get to wealth. So, I had to start looking at like wealthy people online. And I think we talked about this when we had our phone conversation, where, you know, learning wealth is like, okay, I started learning about millionaires and like their habits and all this. And that got boring real quick, because I could just see million, like 1 million right around the corner. I was like, I need to start studying billionaires.
Right.
And so, you know, that's what I've been doing. So those have been my mentor. And, you know, obviously I don't know any billionaires in person, but I know a lot of millionaires. As a matter of fact, I have a lot of friends that are millionaires. I don't always take their advice, believe it or not, because a lot of them have been millionaires working corporate jobs for like 17 years plus, you know, putting their $10,000, $30,000 bonuses in the stock market, just very passive millionaires. Didn't make their millions by actually running businesses. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to make $100,000 a year off of someone else's money, a company, versus making $100,000 a year, just making money out of thin air by your brain and creating a company. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
even their advice, I don't always take. So that's kind of how I bypass a lot of people that's close to my circle. Like, if they're not going to accomplish, or they don't even have the trajectory I have, like, why really take what they're saying seriously? Like, even they might be snarky with me. They might even, like, I look like a fool. Like, they might even, like, mock me in a sense, you know? And I'm just like, you know what, my results, like, when I'm a millionaire, when I have all these, you know, articles written about me, and, you know, when my YouTube goes big and my book sells, you know, all these copies and all this other stuff, and when the world, you know, reveres me because I'm, you know, like I said, I'm a financial advisor for us, for the people.
Yeah,
I have really practical ways that we can get out of, you know, our situations financially. then that's when they're going to be like, wow, I wish I didn't give you such a hard time. I wish I encouraged you so much more. I wish I supported you. You know, they'll come back around, but I know I'm not in the business of convincing people.
So for the people that didn't believe in you in the beginning, now that you mm-hmm. do own your properties, like, what's the conversations like with those people?
Oh, it's funny because this is going to be so funny. I still get mocked because I don't live like I'm worth $300,000. For example, I live in my basement. I live with three. So my basement in my main house, the first house I ever bought, the one that that changed my life. It has three bedrooms up, right? Three bedrooms, two baths up, and then it has a basement down. And then I have like a pool house in the back that I put like a full, it's like a log cabin house. Like I put a full bathroom, functional bathroom back there, right? So it's technically like five bedrooms, three baths right now. So I live in the basement, right? And then I have three Airbnbs up and I'm worth $300,000. I also drive like a 2011 Jeep Patriot that I paid like $5,000 for that car.
So basically you're still sacrificing.
I'm still in the process, right? Let me see. Like, there's nothing, like, I don't really wear name brand clothes. If I am, they're from like TJ Maxx or Ross. And also I get a lot of stuff given to me because there's a thing about wealth or perception of wealth or being rich that you get a lot of gifts. Like, people will give me like $700 photo shoots, $2,000 photo shoots. People will gift me a lot of my pictures that I have that are professional looking. Like, I did not take those like on my phone or didn't, you know, like take, have a friend take them. These are people in photography. They're like, hey, I want to take your photo. You know, I also do a lot of good in my community, like, you know, with my nonprofit and stuff. So people kind of give to me because I also give to others and they're like, you need somebody to kind of serve you too, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I live real, real low key. Like one time I went to a gas station. And I saw, I love telling the story because it puts things in perspective of how to treat people. And I had like my construction clothes on, right? I own an all-woman construction company. And I had my high-lar clothes, my khaki pants, my steel-toe boots. And I went to these Hispanic guys. I speak a little bit of Spanish. And I was like pretty much trying to ask them to do a roof for me for a client. And they was like acting like they didn't speak, you know, English. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the main guy, like the chief. And I was like, hey, I want you guys to do a roof for me. And he was like, oh, he's like, the other Spanish dude that she was trying to ask for money. And I was like, nah. So I ended up hiring them. Like, they probably was on that job like by the next week. And I ended up paying them like $3,000 to do that roof. And then I tipped each of their guys like $100. And I just kind of walked off. And it was just like the best feeling in the world to like have people like, you know, underestimate you. Right, or like go from thinking that, you know, you're asking them for money to you being the one that actually paid them. So like, I'm so low key. Like, you can never tell. And you can't rob wealthy people. You can only rob rich people because rich people wear their money, whether it's by their cars or whatever. But with wealthy people, like, you got to sell all my houses, which is a process. That's a whole legal process. You know, there's a lot you got to do to even touch my wealth. So, like, I'm comfortable with not showing anything for it because I'm a very low target. You know, go ahead.
I was going to say, so it's funny you said it as well, because I had read a book, which is called Smart Money Management. And in that book, he had a story where it was like, it was a guy. A wealthy guy was speaking to a regular guy, and he would come to work, and the wealthy guy didn't drive, you know, a fancy car, but the regular guy did. He drove a Porsche, and he was like, the only thing that let him know is that he was maybe $100,000, however much the car was, he was less richer than he was when he bought that car, because now he know that you owe all that money. All your money is going to that car, basically.
Yeah, your possessions aren't an indicator of your wealth. You know, one other cool story I like to tell, and this kind of ties to a scripture that, you know, I really like, is that there's a poor man that pretends he's rich and a rich man that pretends he's poor. And, you know, I had like a transaction I just did. I sold a car. I had $2,000 cash in this like fake alligator print, whatever, wallet that I bought from Walmart for $10. And, you know, it's $2,000 cash. It's like, it's bulky. I could barely zip the thing up, you know, and it's all cash. I went to Kroger. I left it in a buggy and I drove off, and I'm thinking in my head, oh crap, where's my ID? Or I needed my credit card or something. And then I realized I don't have my wallet. So at this point, I'm like, I kiss that money goodbye, because it's hard cash. Like, if somebody takes it, like, you're not seeing it, like, again, right. You know? So I just kissed that money goodbye. But I was like, you know, I'm hoping they at least just took the cash out, and I still got all my main information, my credit cards, my ID, stuff like that. So that's really what I was going back for. So I go back for it, go to the Kroger, you know, customer service, whatever. And they're like, yeah, somebody returned your wallet. And when I tell you the thing, because I said it couldn't even zip fully. So the thing was still like halfway unzipped. So it was nothing for someone to just fully unzip it and like see what was inside. And so I unzipped it and that $2,000 cash was in there. But wow. I say the story because, you know, what was on the outside kind of in the person's mind who doesn't understand money. And they was thinking, there's no way there's anything of value in here because look at this busted cheap wallet, right? Can you imagine if I had like a Louis Vuitton or something? Just the fact that the name alone would have attracted people to not only the value of the bag alone, but then to search what's on the inside. Me being low-key has protected me so many times. I can like my car is so busted I can leave stuff in my car, all the like computers, expensive construction material, like all the time. I've never had my car broken into. As a matter of fact, my windshield is cracked. Like I pride myself in like looking like a hobo. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's nothing to me because like I've never had people want to take from me, you know, like or steal from me because I don't give off the vibe that, you know, I have anything to take. The only thing that you can take from me is like my wisdom and understanding. You really, and even if you tried, you'd kill me. And so you have nothing for yourself. So my most prized possessions can't even be stolen.
So I got another question for you. You spoke about this earlier about you having a few millionaire friends. My question, well, not even just millionaire friends. This is my question, though. How important is it to surround yourself with people that's actually trying to get somewhere in life or that can bring you value?
It's not even important. It's your lifeline. It's the difference between life and death of your dreams. Because you know we understand the importance of words. Like words can build, words can break, you know, words can give, words can take, words can heal, words can curse, words can bless, words can curse. That's in my children's book, but anyways, so like I'm real big on words. It's important to teach people the importance of words very young, especially children. We shouldn't be so nonchalant. People could be hating or projecting, and even if we have good defense mechanisms or emotional intelligence, what have you, eventually it gets to you. So if you tell someone your dream, they're like, there's a low possibility you'll do that, or that's hard, or, you know, whatever, you should think of something else, or there's no guarantee in that. Like, you know, that might affect your, you know, your self-confidence. That might start putting doubt where doubt wasn't, you know? And so it's so important for you to like surround yourself with people that are like optimists, but also realists that live in reality. I live in reality, right? I understand that I can easily sell my house and have $300,000 cash in the bank, but then what? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then capital gains, I wouldn't have 300. I'd probably have like 220. So I'd lose 80,000 right there just by selling. So I live in an element of reality, but I'm also like over the top optimist. It's necessary as an entrepreneur. And so actually I find a lot of my millionaire friends that are corporate people actually pessimist, because like I said, they don't have to have that above average optimism because they've heavily relied on billion-dollar corporations to fund them. But when you have to be an entrepreneur and you have to go through 99 no's and one yes for your business to work, you start, you know, you make hell a heaven in your head. Like that's just your innate thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think for me, it's not necessarily surrounding myself with other millionaires, because I've understood now, I've especially learned that they're not that impressive with their mindsets and their character traits and things like that. It's more so surrounding myself with people that are of high moral, you know, character and integrity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I call it like a stock. It's an undervalued stock. I'm an undervalued stock. I have the mindset and the character and the work ethic of a millionaire, yet I'm not a millionaire yet. So those are the kind of people I look for. For example, Malik is a good example.
Definitely.
Yeah. So even though I'm mentoring him and stuff, like I'm like, man, you know what? I can actually spend more time around you and teach you what I know, because I'm trusting that you're working on yourself, you know? And
shout out to Malik.
You know, so like that's kind of what I'm looking for, and I hope to just put that word out there for anyone out there who feels like they do need millionaire friends, to feel like, oh, you know, your network is your net worth. It's beyond money at this point. It's really about mindset, it's about attitude, it's about character, it's about positivity. Facts. Those are the things you need to be looking at people, you know.
That's facts. And I did want to say this too about Malik. That's actually how I met Jess, through Malik, and a young man that me and him always speak. And what's crazy is me and him never met in person, but we always speak over social media. And it's crazy. I had a lot of conversations with him And every time I talk to him, I learn something. Every time. There's never been a time that I've talked to him I didn't learn something. And it's just amazing. Like, he sent me some stuff today, and just he taught me stuff that you taught me. That's all I always
well, guess like, I'm his mentor, right? But there's one thing that I always tell for my students. I like to brag on my students because they're kind of like, they're what makes me shine, right? Because if you don't have successful students, like, then what are you as a teacher or mentor? But I always tell my students when I first start mentoring them, I say, I'm not teaching to be like me. I'm teaching to be better than me. Mm-hmm. And I pride myself in my students ending up surpassing me. And a lot of them do end up surpassing me because I'm also living with the mistakes of not having a mentor. And when you're playing the game of real estate, you're playing with big numbers. So you do make mistakes that cost you. So a lot of my students start, you know, even if they're in a little bit of negative, they might be 1,000, 2,000 in negative. They're not like 30, 45, half a million in the negative. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot easier to coach them out of that. And then with no weight, I mean, they're soaring way further than I can even go, you know. And then, of course, they got a mentor coupled with that. And then it's just, and then, you know, I connect them with other people that I know as well. They meet a lot of people through me, like whether it's other students, et cetera. So, yeah, they move pretty fast.
Wow. And so... What do you plan on doing next now since you've accomplished that, like having those four places that you have?
Yeah, so the biggest thing I want to do is, I guess my calling in life, I've always wanted to be a mother, so I definitely want kids eventually. So one of the biggest things I'm doing is just making sure all my passive income streams are, like, you know, put in place. And also, you know, I want to have trust fund babies, so, like, what's the point of building all this wealth just to, like, if you pass or something happens, like, you know, the government squanders it or whatever. So that would be my pride and joy, because I watch how I am with my students, you know, and mentoring. And I'm like, man, they only have like a slither of my time. Can you imagine if you have someone that's living in your household that picks up on all your habits, like little things, like whether it's like taking your health serious, whether it's having water by your bedside, whether it's taking the stairs instead of the elevator, like all these little habits your kids just watch you do. And it's just innate in them. They don't even think twice about it, whether it's how they watch you manage the money or how they watch you value passive income or how they watch you value cash flow over, you know, quick capital gains, all those things. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my kids will be like pretty well off. So that's a desire of mine. Outside of that, I am going to get my master's degree. I've been accepted to two universities. Now it's just a matter of like getting through this financial aid and FAFSA stuff. I also want to join the Air Force. I scored a 96 on my ASVAB, 99. So that's, you know, another goal of mine. I also eventually want to get a PhD in psychology if possible. Mm-hmm. I want to write a book, Psychology 101, which is, you know, a book based on just all the principles and philosophies I have about life that's kind of helped me, you know, become successful. I also write music. I'm an executive producer. So I want to finish my three-part album, Soul Searching, which is pretty much Soul, S-O-U-L is the first album, Searching. The second one, or the first one is Soul Searching, S-O-L-E, which means to search your soul on your own. The second one is S-O-U-L, to search your soul, you know, among other people. And then the last one is S-O-L, which in Spanish, that means the sun. So the third album would just be about enlightenment and searching your soul with something that's like bigger than yourself, so your purpose and things like that. So, I have quite a bit of like creative and artistic works. Like when I'm making quite a bit of money passively, my goal is $10,000 passively a month with $1 million net worth by 35. So by then, you know, I want to work on my hobbies, and hobbies is anything that takes your time and money, but doesn't necessarily give it back to you. So I consider those things a hobby, because even though I'm good at them, and I know I'd write a killer book and I know I write killer music, they don't pay for my lifestyle. So I'm just pushing those to the back burner until I'm using real estate as a conduit to get to my hobbies, essentially. But I think my hobbies are going to probably push me, I mean, way up there in multi-millions.
Almost definitely. I think so as well. I have another question for you. This is kind of off subject from you, but I do want to hear your perspective on this. What advice would you give to younger Black women that's, you know, just younger than you?
I definitely would say the most important decision you would ever make is the spouse you choose. That is the most important decision. I think actually Warren Buffett said that, which is a billionaire. Yeah. So, you know, when you're a young woman, you need to be realistic of like what you can provide to the world, and specifically what you can provide in like a relationship, which is, you know, children. And then, you know, a man's basic needs. So with that being said, a man has to be like worthy of that. Like if you're a woman that's super ambitious, if you're a woman who wants to be a millionaire, if you're a woman who wants to retire at a certain age, you need to make sure that the people around you reflect that, you know? And you don't, if you had to choose, like I had options to choose between marriage or choose between being a millionaire, and I chose being a millionaire every time. And so when you're young, you only have your youth to give as a woman to a man, right? And a man who doesn't appreciate your youth or who's going to waste your youth, he's not worth it. I would heavily suggest, you know, you just focus on just being in a position where you can make enough passive income to be two things for a man, to be flexible and to be available. So, you know, by the time I'm a millionaire, I'll be both flexible, meaning if my husband wants to move to Italy, I can move to Italy or, you know, whatever. So that's one thing, to be flexible, to be a woman, you know, and I believe in traditional roles. So to be submissive to him and move along whatever his purpose, wherever his purpose leads him. And then two, to be available. So to be available, to be a mother, to be available, to be a wife. And you can be a dynamic woman in your household where you stay at home all day, but you're also bringing a family 10,000 plus a month. And so when you're young, Black women, because Black men have it hard. And so, you know, that's a good way for you to like pretty much beat most women out when men look for women, is that, okay, not only is she submissive, not only is she going to be able to contribute financially and kind of give me kind of a sense of security in case my goals and my plans don't happen. But she's also brilliant, she's smart, you know, and all this other stuff. So that takes time, that takes investment in yourself, women. So like, don't be so quick to like look for a guy that's just cute and all this other stuff. Like, look at his character. Is he trustworthy? Is he, you know, loyal? You know, is he committed?
Talk to him.
Like, those are all the things. Like, don't look at, does he have swag? Like, who cares about the clothes that he wears? You know, if he makes $99,000 a year, but he spends $98,000. And he doesn't have an emergency fund. How secure does that make you feel as a woman? You know, I can't trust a man's leadership that moves like that. You know what I'm saying?
I want to add this in real fast. One thing that I learned this year, and it's crazy, I learned it in a book as well, Smart Money Management, said that a man is supposed to have a foundation. If he don't have that, then a woman shouldn't want to, like, and what I mean by foundation is like financial, like really having, like when you just said the 3 to 6 months to emergency fund. I didn't learn that till now, like last year, 2021, reading in that book. And I was like, wow, if I would have had that, you know how many times I would have been saved and I would have been in a better position if I would have just created that foundation. And the guy in the book said, would you rather want your man to have his foundation on solid rock or sand? He's like, you want to have it on rock, on solid, something solid. So you going to feel secure as a woman just to know that your man got, he got y'all financially. Y'all won't fall because he's financially stable. But go ahead. I just wanted to add that.
No, that was great. Thank you for adding that. But I believe, you know, especially because we don't have good examples of, you know, Black men that are leaders in the home, in our community, you know what I'm saying? And so like with the traditional role, I mean, white people are doing it where, you know, where a Black man provides the majority of, you know, the day-to-day expenses, housing, shelter, things like that. And the woman, you know, she provides the future. She looks into the future. If you look at Proverbs 31, it says she surveys the land, you know, and she laughs at days to come. So I think the original dynamic was for men to look at the now, the day-to-day expenses, and the woman was looking to investing. Women make the best investors. My name is Just the Investor for a reason. And I've invested in a short amount of time. I've multiplied everything. Once again, a woman's job is to multiply.
That's right. Facts.
So you bring food into the house as a man, she makes it a million. You buy the house as a man, she makes it a home. You give her your seed as a man, she makes it a baby. Like a woman's ability is to produce. Women are producers. And a lot of times we talk about producers and managers as men, but women should be in roles where they can multiply things for their spouse. How can you multiply if a man has nothing? Like what? 0 times 0 is 0. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so a man's got to bring something to the table so I can even multiply. So part of what the thing on the table, the foundation, is not just the finances, but the ability to manage finances. I've met men that even have tried to pursue me that, like I said, they make six figures, but they spend that six figures too. I don't want that either. And they may have nice cars and all this other stuff. They might have businesses and all this stuff, but that does not impress me. That does not make me feel secure as a woman. Whereas a man can make $60,000 a year and, you know, puts away $20,000 a year and, you know, has two houses and really, you know, slowly and surely like grinding and building his wealth. And I'm like, you know, like I have a friend like that. He makes like $60,000, and he also dog breeds, and he also, you know, going to school to do CDL because he can like up his salary now, and he's doing all these other things. I'm like, you know, that is way more impressive than this guy who makes, you know, 100,000 plus a year, you know, with a house, but, you know, not really, you don't see any trajectory. You don't see them moving forward. You don't even see them on having a path to financial freedom, you know, because for me, it's like, I'm literally going to retire in 7 years. I don't want a spouse that's going to have to work another 20 to 25 years unless they absolutely wanted to. Like, I want them to have like at least a 5 to 10 year plan out, you know?
Yep, definitely. I think that's very important as well. It's funny because you, the other guy that you was talking about that you said had all the things. I always heard big investors say this, the real investing is not sexy because it's for long-term. It's long-term investing. So it's going to be slower. Like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And a woman, like, you just really just fall in love with the man's heart, right? You just fall in love with who he is as a person, how he thinks, how he loves people, how he serves people. All those things are what matters, because you got to think, if you're marrying someone to have babies with, right, you eventually got to think of, is this person capable of being a competent father as well, not just a good husband, right? And so, like, if people just looked way more at the character, really, than all the superficial things, like, we wouldn't have the issue with commitment and with having, you know, two-parent households in the Black community like we do, because the first unit, the first most important investment or structure, you know, infrastructure in wealth is the family unit. Ooh. Outside of it, it's not the school unit, it's not the justice, it's like the first important, the most critical part of building wealth is the family. That's why they call people, that's why they call kids trust fund, you know, babies and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
You know, that's why they call that asset protection. Like, your biggest asset is your family.
That is so true. Know? I want to share this real fast as well. It's so true. One day I was just chilling, and I was like, I wonder what the billionaires, like, I wonder how the billionaires passed down, like, the little, so I went on Google, and I was looking at the smallest billionaires in the world. So it was like 1.2 billion, 2.2. And literally everyone that I clicked on, it said inherited money by father, inherited money, money by grandfather. And I went up a little bit. I went to 3.2. Literally everyone, like, y'all can go on there and go look if y'all don't believe me. Look at the billionaires list. Everyone inherited by a family member of a relationship that was together. And that amazed me. I was like, it blew me away. So what you said is facts.
Yeah. And that's why I started studying billionaires, because, you know, the difference, that study that you did with billionaires, that majority of them was inherited. No difference between a millionaire and a billionaire. Millionaires, I think there's a book called Everyday Millionaire that I think Chris Hogan wrote, and the stat study showed that like 80%, there's a pretty high number, at least over 50% of millionaires is in the U.S. are self-made, meaning they didn't get a huge inheritance.
Yeah,
meaning
you
can literally bootstrap yourself to being a millionaire, but it's very hard to bootstrap yourself to being a billionaire.
Yeah.
And if you have any type of billionaire dreams, you need a family structure. You need children. Yeah. You need heir.
Definitely. That's wild to me. That's wild to me. That was a long answer. That was a great answer as well to that question.
Sorry about that.
Nah, you're fine, because I do feel like a lot of young ladies needed to hear that, especially from a young woman who has six figures and that is Black, and that has a mindset to achieve way more. So I think they needed to hear that as well. Especially because, you know, there's so many people that talk about it, but you actually do it, and you actually have it, and you actually mentor. So I'm glad they got to hear that.
Of course.
I wanted to hear a little bit more about your nonprofit.
Yeah. So my nonprofit, Serving Souls, is pretty much, we do what the name is. We serve souls. But I believe souls, you know, I'm writing my book, Soulcology, which is about, you know, the soul. It's a basic formula, actually. And so it's about just dealing with the spirit of things, right? And so I believe Serving Souls doesn't just deal with people. We deal with three souls and three spirits. And that is, one is people. The second one is pets. And the third one is the planet. So our nonprofit, we're able to, like, serve wherever there's a need. So, like, for example, we just had, like, this big storm in Kentucky. And it just wiped out so many things, this tornado and all this. And we were able to raise money for that, you know, so that's more of a nature thing, right? With the planet and plants and stuff. And then, you know, with people, we've been able to work with women. We've been able to work with children. We've partnered with Boys and Girls Club. We've partnered with Habitat for Humanity. So like we can, there's not really an issue in this world that we cannot mobilize and go and help. And that's what I really like about the nonprofit is that we're flexible. So Serving Souls, we've done well. We've raised over like $20,000 this year. We have done over two point something million dollars in impact through what we do. So whether it's like helping, you know, minorities get homes through home ownership, helping minorities negotiate wages, specifically women. Like this year alone, I think we've negotiated additional $10,000 to $20,000 wage for one of the women in our organization. That was off of a $200 consultation. So our return on investment as far as impact is like, I think it's 20,000% or something, which is insane. So like if I was running it like a business and you and I reported our numbers, like anybody would hire me as a project or program manager because they're like, wow, like based off what people give to us, we have just an, literally from $20,000, you know, donation, we have over $2 million in impact in the communities that we serve. So so Serving Souls is my baby. I intend to, you know, when I'm really, really making a lot of money to invest 10% of my income back to the nonprofit and give to that. So we do affordable housing as well. You know, the nonprofit leases a couple properties to provide affordable housing. We do training through one of the houses that the nonprofit leases. It's just, I love it. That's my passion,
so,
you know.
So how do you balance all this? I mean, it sounds like a lot.
Yeah, everything has its season. So I don't want people to think I sometimes necessarily run all my companies at the same time. I was heavy on running the nonprofit earlier this year. And then this year, I was like the end of this year, or last year, excuse me, because we're in 2022 now. So the beginning of 2021, we was heavy. I was like running it. And then by, I think, August, I took a semi-sabbatical from the nonprofit side. And I let the women in my organization run it. So I have this huge saying, like, I think you should leverage. Like if you want to be wealthy, your favorite word is going to be leverage. And you leverage several things. You leverage your credit, you leverage your capital, and you leverage community, you leverage people, right? Ooh. Those three C's. And I have a huge community around me. People support me. People blindly trust me. I give people full permission to represent the nonprofit, to raise money on our behalf. So a lot of fundraisers we do might not be me actually friend. Like I didn't create that recent GoFundMe. It was a woman in our organization and she raised quite a bit of money. So like, just giving people autonomy. I have this saying within my organization, I'm a boss, you're a boss, let's boss up together. So I don't want anyone to come to me and look for me for instruction or look for me to be an employer. You know, I have people that come to me who are bosses who want to implement whatever vision or dream they have. Serving Souls is such a huge umbrella that whatever passion someone has, they can really, you know, use it to do good. And so I have a bunch of like little soldiers, you know, doing the work that needs to be done to magnify, like, you know, my beliefs and my vision. And the coolest thing about vision is that it's like faith. You don't see it, you know, but you know it's there. The most powerful leaders have visions that other people can see. And that's the thing, like people come to me and they can see my vision. That's such a powerful thing because a lot of times people can be have a lot of purpose, but other people can't even put their finger on like, what exactly is their purpose? I don't have that problem. And when people can see your vision, they blindly follow you, they do.
Yeah, that's deep.
And you can't abuse people's trust. You know, I understand the power, the magnitude that I have of influence. I have a lot of influence. It scares me sometimes. Like, my goodness. You know, I'd meet somebody and someone would say, hey, my mentor is doing this and that. And the next thing you know, somebody like cash has me $10,000 to invest at 7% interest, never met me before. You know? Or I'll house somebody and they're like, yeah, a favor too, right? And I'll house somebody and they're like, man, I see the way you run your business and your nonprofit. Hey, I want to volunteer with your nonprofit. Next thing you know, they're cash happy me $4,000 to invest, you know, at 20% interest. So people give me thousands of dollars. People give me tens of thousands of dollars to invest for them because of my, like, I just don't break trust. I'm a trustworthy person. I do what I say I'm going to do. You know, I don't make excuses. And I'm just for us. And there's a lot of people that just don't know what to do with money, you know, and they see how I can just turn so little into so much. And
go ahead. I think it's because we wasn't taught. I mean, we really wasn't taught that. So with that being said, how would you go about figuring out what to do with your money?
Well, it just depends where you're at. Like I said, you start with the RISE method. You make sure you got your emergency fund. Then you get your savings and your spending accounts right. And then is the I is investing. So if you don't have emergency fund, you shouldn't be investing, because we all hear, you know, investing is don't invest money you're not willing to lose. And then a second rule I have to investing is don't invest in something you don't know anything about.
Right.
So one of my things is another thing, the reason why I think people give me money is because I give them updates on their money. For example, the person who gave me $10,000, I'm sending him his interest money once a month. So at least once a month, hey, this is where we're at with this property. This is what's going on. The person who gave me the $4,000, same concept. I'm paying them once a month. So during that once a month, I'm like, hey, you know, especially if you're giving them their money, if you're giving them their interest already, and interest is their profit, and then you give them, you know, the full capital, the initial principal afterwards. But that already, like, they're already making money, you know. It's like when you start missing payments or late on payments or giving them, like, when they're like, how's this investing, like, going, like, something's off, something's weird, you know, then they start worrying and questioning your ability to invest, you know. But, like, but I do have a regular schedule, monthly schedule of paying back, you know, my investors. So during that time frame is when I try to, like, you know, talk to them about the investment, educate them. Like, and I'm honest, like, hey, you know, this went wrong on here, but, you know, we're recovering it, but, like, you know, still, here's your money. I don't ever make excuses why I can't. I have yet to be, you know, late on payments or whatever. And I have it in my contracts that if I'm, you know, 7 days late on the interest payments, that I pay, like, you know, penalties, you know, things like that, which who wants to pay penalties? I'm already paying interest. So, like, I kind of educate them to the point where they're not investing into something they don't know. Even if they never knew anything about real estate, never owned a house before, you know what I'm saying? By the time I'm done with them, there's two of my investors. Well, one of my investors bought a property after he gave money. I don't think he had a property before. So yeah, that's kind of the level I'm at, because I'm not fearful of, like, oh, if I give people information to do what I'm doing, like, they're my competitors. No, they're going to be my we're going to collaborate. I'm pretty much arming people to be some of the best partners ever. Like, can you imagine multiplying yourself? And then the same person that you taught everything, you know, they end up partnering with you. Like, y'all can do a lot of business together. You know what I'm saying?
So, to finish it up, I want to ask you, are you available to mentor more people, or how's that?
Yeah. So it's kind of tricky. So I do charge, you know, I have about $300,000 of free consultations that I've done since I've been a mentor. And then starting last year, I started charging $75 an hour. However, I have special cases that, like, Malik's a good example, where I'm teaching, my mentorship is actually teaching him to be my business partner. So in the end, it's like, I'm going to make money on the back end, because when we partner, like, we're going to be, like, making money hand over fist. I'm not really looking for too many business partners right now. So, like, you know, I'm not really doing any more, like, free consultations. Those are, like, special cases. But nonetheless, yeah, somebody, you know, $75 an hour is like so cheap. Compared to, like, you can go online and, like, look, and there's people charging like $500 an hour. I'll say this, I am not in the business of convincing people my value. If people are like, oh, dang, that's a lot. That's it. You know, I'm not going to give discounts. I do an hour minimum, you know, for my time. If people see that $75 an hour is of value to them, especially after listening to me talk, especially listening to how I've pretty much turned nothing in my life to something, you know, I have two parents who came from the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. You know, I'm a child of an immigrant, I'm a first generation American. I didn't have anything handed to me, and I was able to make this of myself. Then, you know, come one, come all, you know, I'll make time to fit you all, you know, in my schedule. And then also, I don't also take every. So even if someone, like, wanted to pay me $75 an hour, it's about your heart posture, because realistically, the information I'm going to give you is going to make you a lot of money. And if I feel like there's any kind of evil in your heart, money is just a multiplier of who you are. If you're a good person and you have more money, have access to more knowledge, right? They say knowledge is power. Then that makes you have the power and the money and the resources to do more good. If you're an evil person and I give you this information, then that means you just have more power to do more evil. And I'm a gatekeeper of information. I realized that was my gift that God was giving me. So I also don't, like, oh, for $75 an hour, I'm going to give anybody my information. That's also not how it works either.
Right. I think that's important. It's funny. I kind of learned that this year. I don't want to go too far into it. But I learned that, well, not this year. Last year, I meant to say. I learned that a lot of people, they just like to have access to you. And I have a friend of mine that would tell me, like, stop giving away
people
so much to people. Like, you need to start charging. You do all the research. You stay up all night and research. You do all this just to give it away to them so they can make profit. It doesn't make sense on your end. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So this year I made a promise to myself, like, I'm just not going to give it away. It depends on who it is.
Who it is, exactly.
Yeah. But, is there anything else you would like to share?
Yeah, I feel like I shared my whole life. I'm just so passionate about our community. So I just want to see us win, really. I think we just need to collaborate more. I think we need to love on each other more.
Definitely.
We need to work on intrinsic things. Like, we focus so much on, like, you know, our chains and our cars, but we really need to focus on, like, love, joy, peace, patience,
kindness,
gentleness. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, this might be the year for, if you have any, you know, New Year's resolutions, like, make them intrinsic things, because I promise you that the extras and stuff will manifest. Like, you know,
explain that for people that don't know what that means.
Yeah, so intrinsics is just like your character traits. So, for example, people might come up to you and compliment you on, like, your shoes because that's what they can see. You know what I'm saying? But have you ever had somebody come up to you and compliment you on, like, your energy or, you know, your happiness, your joy, your peace? It's a whole nother level of compliment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's happened to me. Like, oh man, Jessica, I've noticed you've gotten better at setting boundaries. You know, like, I had a friend just tell me that recently. I'm like, man, thank you. I've been working on my self-care and self-preservation. It's such a good feeling to see people notice things that, you know, is not just screaming and shouting on the outside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's deep.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, as us as a community, we're just so flashy. You know what I'm saying? But I promise y'all, like, it might sound like you're hustling backwards, but it's actually you're going in the right direction when you start working on those things in the inside, especially healing too. Work on healing, because, you know, when you're healed, you can love better. You have more patience, you know, all that. So you have a sound mind, you know, all that stuff. So
that's true. Okay. Okay. Well, I really enjoyed our conversation. I enjoyed having you on here. Shout out to Malik again, because I met you through him, and I've learned so much from you already. It's crazy. This year, it's going to be beautiful. And so, anything else you good? Oh, yeah, share your information with them so they can know where to find you.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, I'm on Facebook a lot, and my Facebook is Jessica. Last name is Azor, A-Z as in zebra, O-R. Also, Just the Investor is kind of what I'm known as in the community. Also, I have a YouTube, which is Just the Investor. I also have an Instagram, which is Just the Investor. So, like, those are the main platforms, you know, you can find me on, but heavily I'm on Facebook. You can message me on Messenger. I try to check my, you know, messages quite often. I have a business number, if you wanted to text me, 615-436-3338. And I'll try to get back as soon as possible. You can email me at justtheinvestor@gmail.com. I mean, there's really a million ways you can reach out to me. So, but just don't spam me, like, you know, because I don't like everybody to have access to me. So, yeah, that's kind of, if anybody wants to reach out to me, those are the venues they can reach out to me.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Jess, for tuning in to our podcast. I feel like it's going to be a lot of value for a lot of people. And thank you again. Thanks for everybody for listening. Over the top. Y'all be safe. I hope y'all enjoyed that episode. Look, I want y'all to go check out my book, which is called Keys to Elevate. 3 powerful chapters: environment, positive thinking, and intentional action. These are the keys to elevate. This is just my philosophy. I feel like it'll help a lot of people out. And it's only $9.99, which is $10 going invest into yourself. You can grab that in my link in my bio on Instagram. My Instagram name is _IamDeMond. Go check that out. I promise you won't regret it. And so, look, man, I'm going to add this segment to the end of it, man. If you know anybody that want their, you know, brand promoted or anything, make sure you inbox me at _IamDeMond on Instagram. I'm interested in putting anybody, you know, any segment, anybody to do music, anybody to do lashes. If you want your if you're a female and you want your lashes, if you're a barber and you want your stuff promoted, if you know anybody that want anything promoted, I'm not charging much, putting one segment in the beginning, one segment in the end. You know what I'm saying? So if you know anybody that want their things promoted, let me know and inbox me.